Today on the show, we're talking about what to do if you found yourself in a toxic work culture. We're going to dig in and help you identify what is a toxic environment, and then what does a healthy culture actually look like? Today's guest is Emily Douglas, and she's an organizational psychologist, and she shares so much value on this episode. Before we get into it, I want to say thank you to our partner. This episode is proudly brought to you by My Training. I'd love to invite you to download today's worksheet and resource guide. We're going to link it in the show notes because it's going to have a lot of good stuff that you can take away and then use that to take action with your work situation. This is a podcast about making work work. You'll learn about leadership, career growth, and how to navigate those weird work challenges. I run a HR consulting business called Boldside, where I help leaders build epic team cultures. If you lead a team or run a business and you think I can help, let's connect on LinkedIn. My name is Shelley Johnson, and this is Work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Emily Douglas, welcome back for round two of the podcast. I'm stoked to be hanging out with you again.
Oh, likewise. It's always good to have a second chat on so many things.
Yes. And today we're talking about culture. And this one comes up all the time in our listener questions where they're asking us, what do I do if I'm in a toxic culture? How do I know how to handle it? How do I know if it's time to leave or should I stay? And I think those questions are really really important and come up for so many people throughout their career. So let's just dive straight in. I'm going to hit you with a big one. This is a big question to open with, but what are the signs that you're in a toxic workplace?
Yes, that is, there's a big question. I think if you're asking that question, then the answer is probably yes, that is a toxic workplace. But I guess you didn't invite me on here just to give that answer. So I guess we dive a little bit deeper, and things that you might start to notice is there a high turnover of staff? Now, some workplaces, people just stick in there because of job security and things. So then you start to look at, well, how much effort are people putting into their work? Are they just doing the bare minimum because they no longer feel engaged in their work? There's no real sense of doing it for other people or doing it for the organisation. You also might see higher rates of illness, that people are, you know, actually becoming unwell and needing to take time off work because that workplace is toxic. And I have seen this with both colleagues and people that I have coached and trained, is that they can't quite pinpoint the illness, but it is because of this toxicity that exists in their workplace culture. Other more subtle things that might exist are that there's little cliques within the workplace that people don't share information, or they'll exclude people from meetings or conversations, and that gossip runs rife in that environment. And probably also you sort of see that there's no real opportunity for people to develop or grow in their workplace either.
It is interesting what you said about like the bare minimum, because I hadn't probably tied that necessarily to toxic culture. But I think as I'm hearing you say that and listen to when people just do the bare minimum, where they're not getting that sense of meaning, I think about in healthy cultures, there is a lot of discretionary effort.
Yeah.
And like you see that a lot in, if you're in a healthy environment, people are energized. Like internally, there's a sense of internal motivation for the work that they're doing. Whereas in an unhealthy culture, they're only motivated because of an external like threat or external like risk or like kind of negative motivations that force an action.
Yeah. And I guess sometimes it can be conscious or unconscious of putting in that extra effort of, because some people go, no one's going to notice, no one will recognize me for doing this. So I'm just going to do enough. And that's all I need to do. But other times it can happen quite unconsciously that you just don't realise that you're not doing that discretionary effort side of things, because you don't feel drawn to what you're doing. And after a while, those external rewards don't even drive us. They're not enough to get us to do more.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like on the This Is Money Instagram the other day, there was a post that said something like, no amount of money will fix a toxic culture. Mm. And I kind of think about that. Like you can't get paid enough money, I think, to in the long term tolerate a toxic culture. Now you might stick it out for a year because you're like, you know what, I can do this for a year. But in the long term, I'm just like, well, why would you put yourself through that?
Yeah, and it does start to filter into every other aspect of your life. So yes, I agree with you, but equally I know for some people that maybe that financial incentive will have to be enough. But where we've got that choice and go, yeah, there's not enough money there to make me put up with this, because now not only am I disengaged at work, but I'm coming home and I'm upset or I'm snapping at my children or my partner. I don't have the energy to go do something with my friends. So it starts to seep into your personal life and infect that as well. And that's where you sort of go, yeah, money can't buy that level of discomfort.
Infect is a good word to describe it. Like I, in our book, Sort Your Career Out, I talked about this idea of when we describe toxic culture, sometimes we're so used to that label being thrown around of toxic, but what does toxic actually mean? And if you think about like the sign of toxicity, like on like
the skull and the skull, bones.
Yeah, yeah. And like you think about a chemical that's toxic for you. And if you ingest it, it's slowly poisoning you. And I think about that when I remind myself and anyone listening of what toxicity is, like toxicity is slowly poisoning you. And infect is another way of kind of describing that. Like it seeps into every area of your life and it might not be an immediate reaction that you get from it, but over time, that's where the pain comes in. And I think we need to remind ourselves, if you're in a toxic environment, the change that has to take place for that organization to shift isn't minimal. It is significant deep work that has to happen at the exec level to change that culture. And it can take years and years of work.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's about 5 years to shift a culture of a workplace. And it is one of those things where if I explain to people what my role is as an org psych and how that looks at all different aspects of business and they say to me, oh, you should come to my workplace because of X, Y, and Z. They're the ones where I'm like, do I really want to tackle that beast because it sounds like a toxic workplace? Happy for the work, but at the same time, there's a part of me that goes, gosh, that's going to be a lot. It's not an easy fix. It's a long-term commitment to try and shift the culture and do that in a way that's going to gradually get people on board and build momentum. So it is it's a big thing to try and change.
It's a huge thing. And I think that 5 years makes sense. Like there are no hacks for culture. It's like you can't hack your way from toxic to healthy. Like it's like deep leadership work that needs to happen in order to shift and change. You started talking about the impacts of toxicity on your personal life. So let's say someone's identifying like, look, I'm in this cutthroat, exclusionary environment. It is toxic. It ticks all those boxes. Can we dig into what the impact is on people personally when they stay in an environment like that?
Yeah, so I guess I already mentioned there that you would notice people becoming unwell, to higher rates of illness and days off, and also people would probably become more fatigued and just generally lack energy in their work. But what can also start to happen is that it starts to have the emergence of some mental health issues. So even leading to anxiety or depression, because people have got that heightened level of worry or concern perhaps going into their work. And so that persists for a long period of time and we start to look at then all those symptoms of anxiety or the lack of motivation, the feeling like they aren't recognised, so they get that sense of worthlessness and we start to go down that pathway of depression. So that's sort of our worst case scenario of someone persisting in one of those work environments is that it can lead to acute mental illness.
As an org psych, and this is totally not in our question, so curveball, but as an org psych, have you come across this idea of trauma from work, like work trauma?
Yeah. I guess how that presents comes in different forms, but I suppose I have worked in a more generalist space, so not pure org psych work, where I do then start to consult with people that are finding the workplace, and it can be things like those cliques that I talked about, where the feeling of exclusions and that their opinions aren't heard or their ideas are stolen from them, and that level of trauma starts to disengage them, but to the point where they can't even go back to that workplace. And so we have found people that will take that time off perhaps to reset, but then they know as soon as they go back into that work environment, it's triggering for them. And so it does unfortunately mean that people have to go find somewhere else to go through no fault of their own, you know, just trying to do a good day's work has then done some pretty significant damage.
And I kind of think about when you're in an environment that triggers like your sympathetic nervous system and you start to have those kind of fight, flight, freeze responses in the work environment. And I know like for certain people who've worked in like toxic organizations, they would describe to me when they would drive to work and they would start feeling that feeling of anxiety and it would become more like acute, I guess, the closer they would get to the office. And I guess my question is, how can people, if they're in that environment and they don't have the capacity to leave at that point in time, for a number of reasons, like there's so many reasons why we can't leave straight away. We there's monetary reasons, there's lots of different things. What recommendations would you have for people who are in that spot where they feel like they're in the adrenal response at work? Is there things that we can do to navigate that when it's tricky because it's the environment that you're in? Like I know I'm rambling here, but I guess my question, I'm like, this is a really hard spot to be in. Like, what would you recommend for someone who's experiencing this at the moment?
Yeah, so I mean, it's probably a few different things, but I suppose the one that's really popping up for me and coming to mind with this question is getting them to think about circles of concern, circles of control. So Stephen Covey's work in that space, of people going, okay, there's certain aspects of the work, the environment that I can't control. So it's acknowledging those and going, accepting that. But what are the things that I've got some influence over? So can I minimise the interactions if it's other people? Do I minimise those interactions or find different ways to manage that a little bit better? And I guess I did this a few years back. It wasn't a full-on toxic workplace, but I just had a boss that I knew that being around him really just was stress-inducing for me if it was every day. And so I did a work-from-home day on a Wednesday. That meant that I got a little break from him, and we could work then quite effectively on the other days. It became manageable because I had a day reset in between. So thinking about how can you control those aspects of your work, and it might be something around the tasks that they come in, or getting those people that might be able to have some influence for you, getting them involved to help you out to try and manage. Perhaps it's the way that the tasks are done, or advocating on your behalf, I guess, of how that work comes in. And then really focusing in what can I control and your personal circumstances as well. Okay, I can accept that work is not going to give me those benefits. Do I make sure that to make me the best person I can when I get home is how do I transition? Because I do hear this a lot from people that are finding their workplaces challenging, that they get to this point where they're like, I get home and it's still bothering me. I normally have a bit of a dump with my partner, but they've now said they've had enough. They don't want to hear it anymore because it's really hard on them. And so they need to find a circuit breaker in some way. So it might be, okay, on my trip home, I listen to a podcast and throw that on, and that makes me think of something else or distracts me in a different way, engages my brain in a different way. So that's actually really key. It's not just doing something that's mindless, something that engages you in a different way to help you transition from that stressful work environment to home so that you can really enjoy that opportunity to recharge at home. So you've got to make the home time more valuable and likewise on the returning to work, because yes, I've had people where you've got your smartwatches and they've watched their heart rate climb as they get closer to work because they know that that's a stressful place. So putting boundaries and going, I'm not giving myself permission to think about work until I get to this set of lights 5 minutes out from the workplace. Up until then, it's me, and then 5 minutes beforehand, that's when I'm going to switch my brain and go about work. Now, these ideas are not, I can't wave a magic wand and have you used to doing it, but the more people give these a go and have a practice at doing them and go, okay, I didn't get it quite right that time. I started thinking about work 15 minutes out from work, but then you try, okay, I'll try and switch off again. And eventually we teach ourselves those habits and that we can make those boundaries and those transitions work for us.
That's really amazing. I love the circles of control. I think that is so important, but it's such a hard skill to master because the thing in that circle of concern on the outer ring, and we'll put a link in the show notes about this, that all the stuff that's in your circle of concern but not immediately in your control takes up so much mental space.
Yes.
I'm like, I can't control the environment. I can't control what the exec team or what my boss decides to do. But it does concern me daily, minute by minute, I'm concerned. So how do we, I love the habit building activities you're talking about of going, okay, start the practices, the simple daily practices of I do X in terms of listening to music in the car or listening to a specific podcast that's maybe not work related, or maybe it's this work podcast that you're listening to right now and you say, I will not switch my brain into work mode until I get to 5 minutes out from the office or whatever it is. I love those practical strategies because I think it goes to, you know what, the concern is there. We're not saying it isn't. We're not trying to like push some toxic positivity onto you about the realities. But what we're saying is think about what is in your sphere of control, and what's in your sphere of control is really only, unfortunately, you.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's coming back to there's so many things, how do we do that? But even the practice of writing those things down and going, okay, these are things that are outside of my control, and it's a different process from going, oh, yeah, I know all these things going on in my head that are out of my control, putting them down on paper, going, these are out of my control. And if you can, do it with someone else because they can challenge you and go, okay, that you put that in the influence spot, but really that should be outside. You can't do anything about that. Or actually this one here that you said you couldn't do anything about, maybe there is an opportunity for you to do something to influence that. And it starts to then make us feel more empowered because we're then going, okay, I know I can't change it, but I can definitely do something to influence it in a way that's going to be helpful for me. And that starts to make us feel a little bit more positive about that work environment. And manage our expectations. You know, maybe we had this, we might have come from different work environments where we had a lot more control and a lot more satisfaction, but we have to then manage expectations for ourselves and go, okay, if I'm going to make that decision or I can't make a decision to leave this workplace, then I've got to look at what else it is that I can manage and control or influence.
That's so good about challenging your assumptions about what's in your control, outside of your control, and what you can influence, and eyeballing them on paper is really confronting the realities of that. And I'd love to dig into what's in your ability to influence, because often we've been asked this question on the pod about, can you influence a toxic culture? And my kind of like short answer to anyone listening is, I think every person can influence culture. I think the extent to which they can shift stuff will vary based on the leadership and the openness of leaders to hear, and probably some of that psychological safety. But I want to ask you, Em, what are the things that you feel like people can do? Can they? And challenge me if you feel like, no, people can't influence it, because I'd love to debate this idea.
Yeah. So I guess I probably say you can't influence culture too much, but what you can influence is climate. And so this is probably me just getting my nerd on of going, climate's a little bit more immediate and it's smaller team focused. So you can look about your immediate environment. So that might not be the whole workplace culture, but what can you do in your immediate environment that is going to be a little bit more positive for you? And how do you shape that in a way that's going to be helpful? So that's the bit where you can look at, how do you influence that? And maybe that takes a little bit of, you know, that sticks. Or people go, oh, why is that team over there doing really well? Because they've created a little subculture or subclimate that works for them. Or it might not even be with your team if you go, well, the team's the problem. But you maybe have got a colleague that's in a different team and you build something with them. Or just even your little bubble in your desk, and you make that a positive place to come to and set that up in a way that is is more you and more authentic to who you are, so you feel comfortable in that workplace.
So would you define then that culture broadly is like the entire organization, and then within that we have like these kind of subcultures, or what you describe as like climate, like there's like a more immediate impact in a smaller kind of subculture?
Yeah, so I guess we have big culture of the organization. Each team will have a subculture. Because sometimes you can have an organization that's got a really good culture, but there might be some toxic subcultures.
Yes.
So your climate is more changeable. So that would be, if you're shaping the climate and then you leave that organization, that climate would have gone. Like it's rainy one day, not the next. So it's a bit more changeable than the overall culture. But like, so a climate will, if it sticks, it starts to shape the culture over a longer period of time. So it's more that short, immediate changes. And when I say short, I'm talking, you know, weeks, months kind of time frames.
Yeah. And what other things do you feel like people can do if they're listening and they're like, okay, cool, I would like to influence my immediate work environment, even if it's just my desk or my little kind of small team, whatever that looks like, what could they do practically to shift it?
Yeah, so I guess it's always good to brainstorm with other people, get some ideas in there, and even acknowledge it within the people around you. Okay, when that's problems too big of what's happening at a bigger organisational level, but what do you think we might be able to do? And that could be looking at ways that you share work, redistribute work, that someone might be willing to take on another aspect so that you're only doing things, or you're doing majority of things that you find more enjoyable or just find it easier to get through. The workplace setup. Add a few plants. It's always a little bit more positive when there's some nice plants or there's some personal touches within the work environment. I know people have got different ideas on whether they have photos of family and things like that up, but something that makes it a little bit personalised. So it might be some sort of quote that you've got up there for the day. You can definitely get decks of cards that give you different quotes. Even I've used in the past a little calendar sort of setup that sits on the desk that's showing what your mood is for the day. And sometimes that might not be a positive mood, but it's kind of a little bit of a personal touch that's kind of a, you know, something that sets your space up to be yours and makes you feel comfortable in that space. But then it's also looking at how do you connect with your broader work team or your community, and what are some little activities. And they don't have to be a big, huge team bonding, half-day workshop sort of thing, but what it might be some little things that people do. And it can be the, you know, when most people are into the office, we just do a quick 5-minute check-in and that's it. And it's not a big detailed looking at what work tasks are on, but just a 5-minute, hey, we just all want to face each other, say hi for the morning and then go back to our work. Whatever workplace practice is going to feel right in your environment, because there's just so many different work environments and things like that. And also ensuring that we can include those people that maybe on some flexible work arrangements that are working from home as well on those days. That gives us a great way of just connecting with some of those smaller teams and doing a little microclimate. How can we make that a more comfortable space? And then we stop worrying about that bigger thing that we're trying to shift and change, that feels like we're just banging our head against a brick wall every day, and we just look at that smaller, manageable thing that we can change.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful and practical. The other thing I've seen work really well on teams where there's a small team working in a more kind of working in an environment that has a bit of toxicity. And I've seen this work really well, like, where they've gone, you know what, we can't control that, but we definitely can control how we show up as a small group within this broader culture. And we're going to agree on the behaviors that are non-negotiable for us in how we show up here. And so some things that they've defined, and I'm thinking of one team in particular that I've been doing some coaching with, and they said things like, we're going to be optimists, because the environment was quite cynical. So they were like saying, you know what, we're going to be optimists here in how we relate to each other. And a couple of other things they did is like, we're going to own our attitude. So we're going to just own it. Whether it's sometimes it'll be like, you know what, I'm having a bad day. Some days it'll be like, hey, we're climbing the mountain, we're doing all the cool things. But just being able to own it. And I think being able to define in a subculture, this is how we want to behave here, is really powerful, gives you agency. We're going to go to a quick break. And when we come back, I'd love to ask you about this idea of grit or quit. So what are the signs you need to grit and stick it out? And what are the signs that, hey, you know what? It's probably time to get out of there. If you want to grow in your career, I just wanted to remind you about our book, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Glenn James and I have written this book to help you with any kind of career crisis, but also those things that you want, like getting a promotion, making more money, moving into a leadership role, or if it's time to quit your job. You can find our book wherever you get good books from, or you can listen on the audiobook, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Now let's get back to the show.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Em, I know you love talking about this idea of grit, and it's something that's really obviously super important to you. And I think this is a conversation that we need to be having around those signs of grit. But also, I think there's signs sometimes where we need to go, you know what, it might be time to quit. How do you know the difference if you're in an environment you're like, do I stick it out or do I go?
Yeah, oh, it's a tough question. And I know we spoke about this a little bit as an example on a previous podcast of sticking it out at workplaces, even when all the signals are there that are telling us that we perhaps need to leave at this point. But I think you've got to set that out, plan, you know, look at the pros and cons kind of lists that sort of take us back to perhaps when we were younger and we're pros and conning some really simple ideas. But thinking out why, what would be entertaining the idea of what would it look like if I was to quit. And I often do this when I'm coaching people that are disgruntled with their organisation, even if the organisation is paying me to be the coach, of going, all right, let's entertain the idea of what would it look like if you were to quit? What would change? And it really helps us pinpoint, is it all organisational factors that are making us leave, or are we fearful of what sits on the other side of what happens if we quit? And then we can start to look at that aspect of it. But I guess even taking that back a level, if we're feeling unwell and we're finding that work is mentally exhausting us, it is being detrimental to our mental health, then you've probably hit that point where you've really got to go, do you know what, quit's probably going to be where I need to be at, because this is not long-term good for me. Whereas gritting through it is, we've got to still have some passion and drive for the work. We've got to still have an interest for that work. There's got to be some benefit to us to grit through work. And if we look at Angela Duckworth, has done a massive amount of work of defining grit. And so for her, it's passion plus perseverance. But so that element of passion has still got to be there. So what are the trade-offs for us if we're gritting through it and keeping that front of mind? So it might be, okay, if I stick with this job for a little bit longer, even though I know the workplace isn't great, that might be it hits a particular goal, or that you've worked in that environment for a set time period that's going to look great on your CV to launch you to the next job. And so if you're not there for the necessarily for the workplace, you're there going, okay, that's going to help me reach some individual goals and the next career milestone for me. Sometimes there's some financial incentives. Might be things like, okay, if I just grit it out that little bit longer, that'll notch me up into some long service leave or things like that. So it's, let's not just, you know, throw everything out and quit without thinking through. Are there some reasons that we could stick with it that are going to help us? And I'm not encouraging people to just stick it and, hang in there and not be productive, but it's like, how can I gain something? Is there a skill set that I might be able to gain from sticking with this for a little bit longer? Is there some learning that I'm going to get out of this that's going to be good for me? And having that reframe of why we're sticking it out can give us a little bit more energy to push through as well, that extra perseverance that we might need. And it becomes, we're more in control of that choice. So I don't know, I've probably talked around different concepts there of going, why do we grit or quit? But hopefully that gives the listeners a chance to think about what might be on those pros and cons list as they start to try and make that decision and unpick that decision.
Yeah, and I think we need to align our decision with our personal priorities. So like if you're looking at that pros and cons list and there's a stack, if you're thinking, okay, what are the pros and cons of leaving? And there's all these pros of why we need to leave and maybe one con. But that con might be like, okay, well, if I stay here, I could save up enough money to pay for my house deposit. Well, that and if that's one of your number one priorities for your life right now, well, you know what, that con, if we were to weight them and we go, well, you know what, I can see all this amazing stuff if I was to leave, but the one reason I might stay is because I'm going to be able to, by the end of the year, save enough to buy a house, and that's your number one priority in your life. Well, that con might be weighted super heavily. And I know I phrased that really weird because like it's all like positive, negative, double negatives. You get me. You know.
I get what you're saying. I have to listen to too. I'm sure they do.
You're probably like, this is so confusing, but go with me. It will all make sense in the end. I don't know. I just think this idea of like your reason for staying, you might only have one.
Mm.
And it's like, you know what, but that aligns to my life priority right now. And so I'm going to weight that differently. The big thing I would say if you're in this spot right now is it's really important with any big decision like this, set a timeline for review.
Yes.
Because I think the terrifying thing is when we just set these things and we just feel like we've got this endless like, okay, I'll stick it out because I'm going to save for my house deposit. But give yourself review timelines because there's a couple of things. A, you might be able to get the same money or more elsewhere. And B, if things deteriorate further, does that priority weighting shift for you? So like I would give yourself like milestones. And if you're in a toxic environment, I wouldn't make them long. Like people might be like 12 months, I'll review in 12. No, 3 months. Mm. Like you need to be reviewing regularly, like even shorter, but like you don't have to have this like, well, I have to stick it out and that means indefinitely. No, that could be like 3 months. It could be 6 months. I guess what I'm saying is make sure you assess your decision against your personal priorities, what matters to you. And the other checkpoint I have in my mind, Em, for any of these big decisions around culture is, are there signs of life?
Yeah.
Is there a glimmer? Is there a leader who's saying to you, I get it, I hear you, here's what I'm doing to change this. Like I'm listening to you and yes, the culture here is not where it should be, but this is what I'm doing. And that would be a sign of life if they're listening and they're taking action. That might go, okay, you know what? Overall, I can see some like glimmers here that we could be, you know, heading the right direction. But if you've got none of that and you're thinking, you know what, this is affecting my mental health, I just think, you really need to take a good hard look at the cost of staying and if you're willing to pay that, because I think people need to leave toxic cultures far sooner than they think.
Yeah. And I love that you build on that pros and cons list that I was describing with the weighting, what sits on those lists, because we often don't perhaps weight things accordingly. Even before we come up with our list, we could go, right, what are my values? What's important to me right now? And like you said, it could be that example of, I'm trying to save or home life. Okay, what's that all about? Yep, buying the next property in this suburb with this sort of price range. So that starts to get something more concrete about that particular goal and gives us an idea of if we are sticking it out, what that time frame is and if we're reviewing it. Okay, 3 months, that just gives me that little bit more and maybe that's enough if there is no glimmer. But you're right. If we can go, actually, things will change, then we might want to grit it out and go, well, what is that heading in the direction? There's all this promise. Am I now seeing that start to unfold a little bit? And sometimes it doesn't even have to be the CEO of an organisation that gives you that glimmer. It can be that there's either it might be a person leaves and that changes the whole dynamics of things. So even one person leaving a team means you've got a new team because it resets everyone's expectations of one another and the distribution of work shifts in a different way and how we interact, we slightly adjust because everyone takes on a different role in that new team. Same as if someone coming in, we have to reset how we operate together. Often people overlook that we're resetting. So that one shift might be that enough of a glimmer to go, okay, things are starting to change and it's in a positive way. So I'll look at my goals and have a look and see if that's my review point and it's still tracking okay. I'll keep on gritting this out for another 3 months, whatever that review point might be.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's really it's such a good conversation because I think most people will have this decision that they have to make at some point in their career. I haven't really met someone who's in their 30s that hasn't had to make a call around a culture-based career move. Mm. And so this stuff is just so important to kind of weigh up. And anytime you're making those big decisions, write them down, talk to someone, get input. Don't make the decision in a vacuum. Like, don't make it in isolation. Yes. Like, get wisdom from a mentor, a coach, your family, whoever that is, and review the pros and cons list and against your priorities with someone else. To round out this conversation, Em, I'd love to ask you one final thing, and let's flip the script a bit because we talked a lot about toxic culture. I'd love to close out and go and get your input on, if someone's looking for a job right now, what are the signs of healthy culture that they should be looking for?
Yeah, okay. So I guess if you've got the ability to have a look at it for a company, I would look at whether it's got some high turnover rates, if you could find some information around that. There are a few different review sites that can give you some of that sort of information about where you're looking to work. During the job interview, there's probably some good questions you could ask around what are the expected work hours here? Does that look different during surge periods? And the way that response is given to you might give you a sense of that culture of, be amazing if a workplace sort of said, yep, look, we're really strong on making sure that people leave the office at 5 p.m. to get home. But the fact that you're asking about surge periods also doesn't look like you're someone that's trying to avoid working in challenging environments. So it's standard work, but what does a surge look like? Because that's going to happen as well. I'd also ask about what sort of out of work involvement or so those social aspects of the work. Is there things that people do to celebrate milestones, or how does that look in the office environment? Also looking at, asking that question in an interview of going, okay, once I'm settled in and established and I've proven my worth, I think you've really got to frame it in that manner. What opportunities would there be to grow and develop? So seeing if that's something that is encouraged. And it's not necessarily asking to go on the expensive courses either. It's, is there a mentor program, something like that, that can be run in-house with, low cost, but it helps the organisation help you. So I think you've got to frame that in the right way so you don't look like you're saying, provide me everything. It's the, when I've proven that I am worthy of that, what can you offer?
I love that. I think that's a really balanced way to ask the question, because you don't want to come across in an interview as being someone who's entitled and like just all about what you get out of it. So balancing that, both of those questions, I think do that really well. And the thing is, like, organizations, this is the thing I come back to all the time. No organization sets out on a mission to be toxic. Like, they don't get up in the morning. The exec team don't get up in the morning like, gee, we just want to make this a miserable place to work. Like,
how can we stuff people around today?
Totally. They want it to be healthy. Like, I think every leader set, like, I mean, there'd be like the exceptions to this, but most leaders that I've worked with have a desire and intent to build a healthy culture. And a CEO that I worked for said this amazing thing. He said, organizations don't drift towards health, they drift towards toxicity. Just like in your personal life, we don't drift towards being healthy. We drift, if we're not intentional, towards unhealthy kind of habits when it comes to nutrition and like exercise and all that stuff. So it takes intention. And you know what? I love what you called out there, Em, of one person can change a team. Like, one new person changes the team. And so you speaking up and helping an organization, sometimes you hold the mirror up to that organization and say, you know what, we could do better. We can be better. And that's why I feel like you can have impact in where you're at, and also have the understanding that most leaders want to build a healthy culture, but sometimes they don't realize the impact they're having.
They might not have realized that they've gone off track or that they've lost touch with what's happening because they might be looking upwards of what's needed in that direction and not looking, how is this now impacting everyone around me? And you're so right. People don't come to work. No one comes to work to do a bad job, and that includes leadership.
And so my call to action for anyone is do this work of doing the pros and cons list, like Emily's described. Look for those signs of life, weigh it up against your priorities, and genuinely get input from others on this question around grit or quit, because I think it's a big decision. So get some wisdom from other people who you trust, who you know you value their input. We're going to wrap it up there. Emily Douglas, thank you so much for coming on the podcast again to have this conversation. It's been such a good, deep chat.
Thanks so much, Shel.
As always, if you enjoyed the episode, give us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple and share this with a friend who you think needs to hear this message. It's really important and something we get asked a lot about. You can jump on LinkedIn if you enjoyed the show. Message me. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much, Emily, for joining us.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast.
Before you do anything meaningful with your money, you need to be able to control your money. I can help. The Glen James Spending Plan is a complete spending plan budgeting system that will show you how to manage your money. It includes a downloadable spreadsheet that will tell you how much to put into what account each week, and you will get control over your money within 2 pay cycles. Thousands of people have used the Glen James Spending Plan and it is now free. So download the Glen James Spending Plan and enroll today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.